Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
There are many different paths you can take, but there's only one road to Atlanta.
The high drive deep out to left field. He clubbed it. Brady twisting and turning, looking up and giving up. It's a home run for Dansby Swanson. Flair out towards shallow right. That's big trouble. Albies going back. He dives and he makes the catch. What a play, Ozzie Albies. Swanson is headed for three. He'll try for an inside the Parker. Relay throw comes toward the plate. He'll score standing, and it's his second inside the park home run of the season.
This is your weekly podcast dedicated to the Atlanta Braves farm system. Follow the show on Twitter at @Road2Atlanta. Now, hit the road with your hosts, Eric Cole, Gaurav Vidak, and Garrett Spain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Road to Atlanta, a podcast devoted solely to the Braves farm system and Braves prospects. I'm one of your hosts, Eric Cole. You may recognize me from my work over on BatteryPower.com, where I've been the deputy site manager since 2018 and the minor leaguer since 2015. Now, normally this is the part of the show where I introduce Garrett, who's been my longtime co-host on the show, and we start kind of diving into the different levels of the minor leagues, what's been going on over the previous weeks. That is not what's going to be happening this week. One, we're not going to be talking about the different levels of the minor leagues. And two, I have a very special co-host and guest. You can follow his work over on MLB Pipeline and follow him on Twitter. One Jim Callis. Jim, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm a little bit under the weather. I'm just going to be completely honest. It's just kind of one of those years where allergies kind of, you know, completely wipe me out. But I'm making do like all of us are trying to these days, and, you know, desperately hoping that whatever little minor sniffles you get don't turn into something far worse. So I'm kind of thankful that that's not the case. But so what we're going to be doing on this show, for those who aren't aware, is that it's a little over right at 3 weeks now. The 2020 MLB draft is going to be happening, and we want to start previewing that draft from the Braves' perspective. And I couldn't think of a better person to talk to first than to reach out to Jim, talk to him a little bit what he's hearing about the draft in general, he thinks is going to be going on with the Braves. So we're just going to jump right into it, because I know that Jim is a very busy man this time of year, and I want to make sure that we kind of, you know, give him plenty of time to flush his thoughts out. And the first thing I want to ask you about, Jim, is that, from what I'm hearing and kind of what we're kind of just seeing, just the general narrative so far, is that the first round of the draft right now seems to be hinging on how teams are evaluating all these Tommy John arms, in particular those the college arms when you're looking at Peyton Paulette, Landon Sims, Hunter Barco, even guys who are coming back like Connor Prelip, and then a prep arm and Dylan Lesko. A lot of the top arms in this draft got hurt this year, and that has really kind of thrown a chink in kind of the machinations of how the draft is operating. So how do you see the Braves fitting into that mix in terms of evaluating whether or not they could maybe be in the mix for one of those Tommy John arms in rounds one or two? And do you see like any teams in particular other than the Braves that are kind of keying in on those college arms?
Yeah, it's so hard, Eric, on that, because one, like, teams, I was going to say, we're still 3 weeks away, like you said, and teams kind of lay low on those guys. Like, if you're trying to get one of those guys, you generally are keeping really quiet about it. You know, especially, let's say the Braves were interested in those guys. The Braves, you know, are picking, what is it? They're picking 20th. They don't have any extra picks until they get a free agent compensation pick at 76, by which point most of those guys will be gone. And, you know, they've got all the teams with competitive balance picks and a couple teams with free agent comp picks between the first and second round who have bigger bonus pools and are laying in wait, you know, and so I don't really know if the Braves are, because the thing is, if the Braves were say, hey, you know, Braves were somehow letting it be known they were interested in Peyton Paulette from Arkansas, well, there might be a team like the Rockies have two supplemental first round picks, and maybe the Rockies like Peyton Paulette. Well, then they're going to let Peyton Paulette's guy know, hey, the Braves only have like a $3.4 million slot, but we can maybe give you $4 million, you know, if you got to pick 31 or 38. So that's what's made this draft hard. There's so many guys who could have been first round picks who were hurt. Reggie Crawford from Connecticut's another one. Henry Williams from Duke is another one. You know, Connor Prelip's back throwing bullpens, and those are just the Tommy John guys. I mean, you have Carson Wisenant, who was suspended, and you have Kumar Rocker, and nobody knows exactly what plagued him when the Mets had him, you know, failed his physical last year, and Blake Tidwell was kind of up and down Tennessee. So it's so hard. You have all these arms who could have been first-round picks. You know, my guess is I would say the Braves probably won't be in the mix for one of those guys, Eric. And this is just educated conjecture. I just don't think they're going to take one of those guys at 20 because if – I mean, they could, but I just think other teams theoretically could pay those guys more. And, it, you know, even though Tommy John, you feel like guys are going to come back from Tommy John okay, you don't see, you know, a lot of guys – you know, taken who've had Tommy John surgery in the first round. Usually you take the guy with your second pick and pay him. I mean, there are exceptions. Gunnar Hoglund last year is one, but it's just really hard to figure. But so that's a long way of saying I don't really know where any of those guys are going to go, because I think that's something you kind of find out maybe towards the end if something slips out. But it makes this draft very, very interesting.
Yeah, and that kind of lines up with what I'm hearing too, right? It's that it's all about the money. And, you know, it's because there's going to be a kind of a bidding war that's kind of happening in the dark corners of, you know, like how much would you sign for? Would this be enough? Would this be enough? And then those agents kind of taking those offers and seeing the most they can get for their guy and how that lines up with bonus slots, right? Because there's all these teams that have so much bonus pool, and the Braves are not, they're kind of like a, like in that middle tier, but towards the bottom of it because they've got that extra pick this go around. And it's kind of fascinating is kind of what that means for what happens in the first round. I'm not sure how many of these guys are going to go in the first round or how many are going to be, like you said, going to be those second round picks that are might be over slot picks or even maybe even slot picks there, just kind of depending on how far they are out, you know, what their, you know, unique situation is. And that's been kind of what we've been hearing is just that, you know, especially as far down as the Braves are picking, is that it's kind of hard to, I mean, they've got probably a dozen guys that they think might be there that they could be interested in. And it all comes down to, you know, how much it's going to cost to sign them. And, you know, there's so many things happening in front of them. It's almost impossible to handicap, right?
Yeah, it is. And like I said, too, I just, if you're in the market for one of those guys, you generally try to keep it quiet because those guys are not obviously going to go as high as they would have had they been perfectly healthy. And so then, you know, as you slide, then it might become, you know, hey, maybe if the Braves want you at 20, you know, somebody who's got a pick in the 30s and supplemental first round might be able to pay you more money. So everybody tries to be super quiet on those guys. And there's just so many of them. It's hard to figure. You know, you have all the guys who are hurt. And then, like I said, the guys who are now pitching a little bit, you know, like Kumar Rocker and Carson Wisenant and Connor Prelip threw a couple bullpens. But it makes the pitching very, very, very hard to figure out.
Yeah, and it's definitely going to be the biggest storyline, I think, from that first round. It's kind of where those pitchers end up, because then you start looking at a lot of these, you know, these prep bats that may be in the middle of the first round. Do they, you know, do teams actually take, you know, really try to take these arms early, you know, get, you know, stay quiet, make those picks, and then, you know, firm up the deal and get the pick done. And then maybe some other bats slide or some other guys that would normally, you know, in a lot of these, you know, if we're being honest, if all these guys were healthy, you know, the guys, some of the guys that the Braves are currently connected to would be debatable first round picks. At the very least, they'd be at the bottom of the first. So, right. You know, maybe those guys slide. So who's available is going to be the biggest thing. And it seems like the smart plan would be just to kind of keep their options open. And that kind of leads me to my next question, Jim, is that, you know, again, we talked a little bit about the, you know, the Braves, they don't have that big bonus pool to leverage. They just don't have it. I mean, the Orioles, the Diamondbacks, the Mets, they just have so much money this year. Kind of, again, that lower middle of the pack bonus pool. Again, a little bit of a boost because they get the extra pick after round two. But with that kind of bonus pool, do you see them either making a big overslot move either in the first or second round? Or is it just kind of, it seems like the teams that have that level of bonus pool, are they going to be strictly maybe some overslot signings on day two, but really trying to spread the money out and trying to get the most value? Because that's what they've been doing previously. And to my eye, anyway, it seems like that seems like the best course of action for them.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like, they have an $8 million pool. So you can go to about $8.4 million without, you know, losing future draft picks. Yeah, if they went over slot, I don't necessarily see them doing it in the first round, and I don't feel like there's going to be necessarily like a $5 million player who falls to them at 20 anyway. You know, maybe I could see maybe in the second round, you know, if they went, you know, $1.8 to $2 million, if the right guy was there and you try to get him to fall to you, you know, I could see that maybe, but I don't think so. Like, you know, that hasn't typically been their MO to go up, you know, go after guys like that and spend a bunch of money early and you know, and then scramble around. So I think it'd be more, you know, that, you know, I think they'll spend the extra 5% you can do. You know, they have most years, spend the extra 5% to add a little bit money to the pool. But I think it's, you know, they've typically sprinkled it around. I don't think we'll see them go $5 million in the first round and then have to be budget conscious the rest of the way.
Well, just to kind of piggyback on that, kind of the guys that you kind of seeing as of right now being in the, like the top 15 picks, like who is a guy that could fall to 20 that would, that could realistically fall to 20 that could be penalizing as more of a full slot pick, I guess, a full slot or higher pick.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if there's really that guy. Like we've got it's top 13 guys on our board. You know, one's dogs are going crazy here. Well, one's a high school pitcher, Brock Porter from Michigan, and the other 12 guys are hitters. And I just don't think you're really going to make those guys fall. Like if one of them fell, you know, maybe it's Arizona catcher Daniel Susak. I don't feel that's like a signability thing. And I don't necessarily think he'd fall all the way to pick 20. That would kind of surprise me, to be honest. So then like the guys we have at 14 and 15 on our list, you know, one's Dylan Lesko, the Georgia high school pitcher who would have been the first pitcher taken high school or college, but he had Tommy John surgery. And again, these time I don't know what his market is. I don't know if he has
exactly.
Guys that's, paying $4 or $5 million. And then number 15 is a high school left-hand pitcher named Brandon Barriera. And the high school pitchers never go as high as their rank. So Brandon Barriera could be available at 20, and it would just be on merit. Like one of the guys I was talking to the other day was pointing out, and he's right, that every year, you know, all the publications – you know, rank the high school guys and the teams are excited about the high school guys. And then as the draft gets closer, everybody wants college players. And then high school pitchers especially don't go as high. So I just don't see like there's not a situation where like Termar Johnson or Cam Collier or Jacob Berry is going to fall to 20. I just don't think there's that guy this year. And, you know, like it's interesting because I always think fans feel like, I don't know if you get these questions a lot, Eric, where like, and fans feel like everybody dreams like, oh, my team's going to force so-and-so to get down to their pick and pay them. And the problem is if you're talented, even if you're throwing out big numbers to try to scare people off and get to a particular place that you think is going to spend the most, this happens every year where teams just don't buy it or say, you know what, we're going to offer you a bunch of money and we don't think you're going to turn it down. So I don't really see a scenario where on, you know, July 17th, Braves fans are rejoicing because player X fell to 20. I just don't think there's a guy like that this year.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So that kind of brings me to my next point, and it's an interesting one because we're pretty focused on the Braves system here, and for a while now, especially with early picks, with the notable exception of the Shea Langeliers, Braden Shoemake first round, is that it seems like the Braves are averse to drafting bats early. Now, do you think that just based on, again, we're talking about maybe the last 5 years or so, right? And the 2020 draft was obviously a weird situation where, you know, whatever projections you have on draft strategy kind of go out the window when, since it's only five rounds. But do you think that that focus on pitching has just been a function of their draft position, like vis-a-vis like what the draft classes look like? Is that just like, is pitching just generally what's available where they've been picking? Or do you think that that's a draft philosophy that they just typically would just target arms in general? Like they would be targeting arms if they were higher up in the draft. That's just where they feel more comfortable.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I know, you know, we've had some regime change, but like if we've been talking about this in like 2019, you know, they took Langley's Shoemaker, would have been like, oh, geez, you know, the Braves have just spent three straight top 10 picks on pitchers, and before that, their previous two first rounders were pitchers, and they were super pitching heavy, and then they took the two first rounders. I don't know. I mean, you can argue that. I mean, they pushed Schuster up. I don't think Jared Schuster was consensus. 25th overall pick in 2020. I think even Ryan Cusick, who's also from Wake Forest, another pitcher, I think he was even a little bit under slot, wasn't he, last year? If I remember,
he was a little bit, not
huge.
It was crazy, yeah.
But I'm saying, like, they weren't consensus. Like you aren't getting a haircut on a guy if he's going exactly where the consensus has him landing in the draft. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I do know my personal philosophy is you cannot, I just don't think it makes sense in the first round, especially, to say, hey, we're going to take this position over that position, because, you know, if you're so wed to college pitchers, you know, which is what they've done the last couple of years. What if, like, a really good player, what if like a Zach Neto is available at 20 and he'd be a really good pick and you take a lesser player? Like, so, I mean, I mean, it's interesting because all that said, like, I've heard mainly college pitchers. I think Jonathan Mayo and I have done 8 mock drafts since the college and high school season started, and we've given them a pitcher every time. So, and I know, you know, just talking to other teams to pick around the Braves, I think everybody feels like they're looking at college pitchers again. But, I think pitcher is not a bad guess, because I do think like the top couple tiers of bats are going to go probably right before they pick most of them. So, you know, most of the very best bats will be gone, and the best values, you know, very well might be pitchers. So, like, I think they could go pitcher, and it might not even be a, hey, we have to have a pitcher philosophy, as it is, you know what, like, of the first 19 picks, 16 of them were hitters, so the best values are pitchers right now.
Do you see any bats in particular that the Braves could be interested in? I mean, I know, like, you're hearing kind of the same things that we're hearing, and obviously probably more information than us. Is that, you know, it's centered on college hitting, but have you heard, or college pitching rather, have you heard any hitters that have been connected to the Braves, even like tangentially?
I haven't heard specific hitters to the Braves. I mean, the types of hitters who'd be available kind of in that range, who should be available, you know, on the college side, you'd have, you know, the Oklahoma shortstop Peyton Graham, who had 20 homers and 30 steals this year. I think first D1 player to do that in 18 years or so. Ton of college outfielders like Chase DeLauder from James Madison and Jordan Beck from Tennessee and, you know, Sterling Thompson from Florida. And then, you know, on the high school side, I mean, I think Tucker Thoman, who's from South Carolina high school, he'll wind up at third base. I think those are hitters who would kind of go in that range. I have not heard the Braves specifically on any of those guys individually.
I got you. So I want to talk. We're going to take scale back a little bit, because there was one rules change in particular that I know you were excited about, and I'm excited about, and probably a lot of folks aren't.
I'm not as excited anymore, Eric. I'm going to break your heart here in a second. But go ahead.
Oh no. So the CBA brought multiple important changes to the draft. Now, one of those changes is contingent on certain decisions being made that regarding the international draft and whether or not the qualifying offer will still be in effect. That's going to be a big deal one way or the other. But the big changes that we know for certain for this year is that the draft is going to be limited to at maximum 20 rounds. And they're also bringing back draft and follows. Now, Draft and Follows is something that I am personally a big fan of. I think it's just one of those quirky little rules in a draft that kind of allows a team to, leverage some advantage if they are really good on the scouting side. But what has your feedback been in general on what's been going on with the CBA and, whatever changes you want to talk about, the floor is yours, sir.
Yeah, and we have a draft lottery coming, which will be interesting. Not so much that, the teams with worst records are still going to have by far the best odds.
Right.
All the non-playoff teams will be in the lottery. But the most interesting thing I think about the lottery is that if you're a revenue sharing recipient, you can't pick in the top 10 more than 2 years in a row. And if you're not a revenue sharing recipient, you can only pick in the top 10 1 year in a row, which is kind of interesting. But so the Draft to Follow, I was very excited when I found out about it. And now I'm not excited. No, I'll explain why. So the Draft Follow is a rule they used to have when they went to a single draft in 1987, or I guess even had it a little bit before that, but where you could draft a player out of high school or junior college. And if he went to a junior college that fall, you retained his rights the following spring and you could sign him up to a week before the draft. And you could do this, it allowed you to speculate on guys who maybe, especially now with a shorter draft, guys who aren't necessarily ready for pro ball, but maybe, they develop significantly physically over the course of a year. And then you go in and sign the guy, and he's got some leverage, because if you don't pay him, the player has leverage too, because if you don't pay him enough, then they're just going to go back in the draft. And like Andy Pettit was a draft and follow, and Roy Oswalt was a draft and follow, and Travis Hav, a bunch of guys were draft and follows. It was kind of like you said, if you had confidence in your scouts who were able to project pretty well a year down the line, you might draft some guy in the 44th round, and then the next year you pay him $1 million, and he's like a second round pick type of talent, and good thing. So anyway, I was excited when they brought it back, because they got rid of it, I want to say in 97. They
got rid of the 90s, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was the 97 CBA, and with no warning, and everybody was very upset. So it's kind of cool rule, but here's the problem. The rule, they've drawn the rule in extremely limited fashion, because they announced when the lockout ended, the draft of followers would come back. And my first reaction was like, wow, I wonder which side even asked for that, because they were at the point, obviously negotiations were very bitter. Like, you couldn't even say like, hey, how about, we order from, Subway, we're going to get sandwiches from Subway. And then the other side would be like, no, like, we want Jimmy John's. And if you want Subway, what are you giving us for that? So I was like, who's asking for the draft and follow? But it's not the rule as we used to know it, Eric. Here's the problem. So, and also with the shortened draft, most teams are signing most of the players they draft. So it's not like in the old days where picks were unlimited, or you had 40 or 50 picks and you aren't consigned 40 or 50 guys, that you had some room to take the guys. But here's the biggest problem with the rule. It only applies to rounds 11 through 20. Okay, but I can only sign the guy the next spring for up to $225,000. So you have to thread this needle where essentially, okay, we're going to take this guy in rounds 11 through 20, who, right away I can sign for $125,000 and not have it count against my pool. Or if I sign it for $225,000, only $100,000 counts against the pool. Next year that'll go up to $150,000. And like, we're going to sign this guy, or we're going to draft this guy in the 15th round next year, and next year we'll pay him $225,000. Well, that's a seventh round bonus. So you really thread the needle like, okay, this guy's going to get incrementally better from the 15th round to the seventh round, but he's not going to be so good that we aren't going to be able to afford to pay him, because he's just going to re-enter the draft. So I just don't think many teams are going to use it. I think it's going to be more accidental than anything. I don't think you're going to see teams – prioritizing, hey, we're going to make a couple draft to follow picks and stay on guys. I think it's going to be more like, hey, we took this guy in the 12th round or whatever. He went to junior college. Hey, you know what? He's equivalent of a seventh round pick, so we'll pay him $225,000. It's too bad. I think a better way, like, the point of implementing the rule from MLB's perspective is you do get players who aren't quite ready for pro ball necessarily, but they sign out of high school and then 2 years later they get released, and then what have you. You're 20 years old, you blew a chance to go to college, and this way it gives both the player and the team like an extra year to figure out, what is this guy exactly. And to me, if you were trying to really maximize the value of the draft follow rule, I would have almost created draft and follow. It would say we're gonna do rounds 21 through 25 or draft and follow rounds. And I would have allowed you to spend more money. I would have given, say, I don't know what number you want to set at MLB prize. I want teams going berserk, but maybe you set it at $750,000 budget for drafts and follows, or $500,000, or $1 million. And I can use that budget on one player. I could use it on all five players if I want. I could. I would have given teams maybe the flexibility that, let's say, I want to go 1.2. We have $1 million draft and follow budget, but I want to go 1.25 to sign two players. Then that 250 comes out of my bonus pool. Like that's how I would have done it. I just think I understand the intent of bringing the rule back, but it's so narrow that, like, I just don't know. Like, it, honestly, for me, especially next year when I can pay guys $150,000 without accounting against my pool rounds 11 through 20, Eric, I would just rather go ahead and sign a guy in the 18th round who I like than try to speculate on a guy who might be worth an extra $75,000 a year from now, but not more than that. Like, my scout's got to be like, hey, this guy's going to be a seventh rounder. He won't be a fifth rounder, but he'll be a seventh rounder. And it's just, and then, like, honestly, at that point, even if I'm the player and you're going to give me 225, I'm going to just roll the dice and see, like, maybe I go at the top of the seventh round with a slot this year's 249 and I come out ahead. Like, so I just don't think anybody's really going to avail themselves. I was really disappointed because I was excited about it too. Nobody had any inkling that it was coming back. And then when we got the details, it's just going to be very, very hard to use. Like I said, I think it's going to be more of an accidental rule.
You've broken my heart, Jimmy.
I know. I know. Like, it was a cool rule. The Braves have been good at scouting junior colleges for years. And like I said, it was a very cool rule. And then when I found out you can only sign guys for $225,000, it's like, I mean, the best scout in the world isn't so good that he's going to say this 18th rounder is going to be a seventh rounder next year. So let's wait a year. Like even return on investment on the draft, be honest, I would just rather sign a guy for 125 this year. Or two to, like, everybody, almost anybody can find an extra $100,000 after the 10th round in their bonus pool. Sign it. If I like the guy, I'll just sign him for 225 now. They'll let him go to junior college. Like, I'd be very curious. I mean, not that anybody's going to track this. I just can't imagine that if somebody did, that we're going to find that there were like 25 players selected with the idea that they'll be draft and follows. I just don't think it's going to work that way.
It's funny. I was going to actually ask you, following up to this, what change you would make to the draft if you could make one rules change, and you gave us the.
Fix. Oh, no, I'll give you a good one though.
Sure.
It's always like, I mean, now, it, I mean, I would probably, like, on a more general sense, I would do away with all the bonus pool rules and just, if team wants to spend, let team spend what they want to spend, because in the past, the teams have spent the most in the draft were teams like the Royals and the Pirates, and they built playoff teams because they were willing to spend. Like, the Pirates can't compete with the Yankees for Gerrit Cole as a free agent, but the Pirates could and did outspend the Yankees in the draft, and they were willing to do that. And it's a longer term investment, takes a while longer to pay off, but, like, it's still the cheapest way to and most effective way to build a team is through the draft. Like, so that would be a main sense. But assuming bonus pool rules are not going away, the one thing I've always thought was kind of goofy is, so the only picks that are protected if you don't sign them are in the first three rounds. You don't sign a pick in the first three rounds, you get a compensation pick, you know, roughly where that pick was the next year. So I understand if I don't sign my second, or, you know, we'll put this in Braves terms. When the Braves don't sign Carter Stewart, the Braves lose that bonus pool money because they're going to get a compensation pick the next year. If they didn't lose the bonus pool money, they would get to spend Carter Stewart's money in the current year and then get Carter Stewart's same pick the next year and basically get to spend that money twice. So I get why you take that away. But here's what's goofy. In rounds 4 through 10, if I don't sign the guy, I don't get the pick back, but I still lose my bonus pool money. And, you know, we're talking, I think the average team rounds 4 through 10, just doing a little back, like, it might be, it's like a couple million dollars. I think it's like a couple million dollars on the top end. And maybe on the bottom end, I'm just trying to do the math here real quick. It's more like, maybe it's like 1.8. So there's not really that much difference between what the team that picks first in each round, the Orioles, and the team that picks last in each round, the Giants, get. So what I would just do is, you could keep the bonus slots what they are. But I would just say, if you don't sign your fourth round pick, you still keep the money because you aren't getting the money back. And you should be able to spend that on somebody else. So that would be my My like, and I would almost do just a flat amount. Like, we could just say everybody from rounds 4 through 10 gets $2 million, an extra $2 million tacked onto their bonus pool picks from the first three rounds. I guess you'd have to work it out if a team was forfeiting picks for free agents. But I just would say if I don't sign my fourth rounder, I should be able to spend that money on somebody else because I'm not double dipping on it. So that would be, if I'm forced to keep the bonus pools, that would be my rule change.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. Jim Callis has fixed the MLB draft. We're going to go ahead and make sure we get this drafted up and sent off to the appropriate entities to see if we can get this done. Because I actually like the sound of all of that, to be honest with you. It sounds like a lot of fun. I kind of would invite the chaos of making picks tradable, but I understand why that could be problematic.
Yeah, you know, so. I feel like we're going to get that, Eric. Like, I didn't think about that. Like, it's funny because when I started, and I'm old, I've been doing this stuff for 30 years. When I started, there was this notion that, like, if you allow picks to be – like, I had some – it was like 50 – it was like split camp. You'd have half the guys I would talk to pretty much would be like, yeah, that would be cool. It would create interest, et cetera, et cetera. And the other half were like, no, agents would manipulate it, I mean, this was well before Bryce Harper, but, like, you have – you know, like, Pete Incaviglia forced to trade out of Montreal – before he signed his contract as a number 7 overall pick, and teams hated that. And so people were worried the agents were going to have all this leverage. And I don't think that would necessarily happen, but that's a good one too. And I do think there's more willingness to have that. I wouldn't be surprised if we had more pick trading beyond just the competitive balance picks over the next, I'd say the next couple CBAs. I think there's a good chance it could happen. Like, I think you might have a limit where you don't let you could trade picks in certain rounds. Maybe it's top two rounds. Maybe you can only trade picks X years out, so you don't have some team trade 10 years worth of first rounders like the Cleveland Cavaliers did in the yeah. NBA years and years ago. And they put in rules. I think you can only trade your pick every other year or something. I know there's some NBA rule that limits that. But I do think A, it would create interest, and B, there's teams that don't want to spend on the draft at certain points, and you're kind of forcing them to. And, I just think, too, if you're a contender, let's use the Braves example again. Like, the Braves farm system is not especially deep or as strong as it once was. What if the Braves are looking to make a trade, this July, to fortify themselves for another World Series run? What if the Braves said, hey, okay, maybe we don't have that. We're not giving you Michael Harris, and we don't have a upper echelon prospect we really want to get rid of, but we'll give you our first round pick. I think it would add some interest. From a selfish standpoint, it would be bad for me, Eric, because I know when we're doing mock drafts, not that you're ever going to get them perfect.
Oh yeah.
But the nice thing is, compared to the NFL, like in the NFL, everybody lies to everybody because you can't even intimate, whoever. And because if you do, then our team might see that and be like, oh, no, they're going to draft him. So we're going to jump up three spots ahead of them and get the guy. And right now, like, what's nice is I do think there is a pretty good give and take when I'm doing mock draft stuff and I'm talking to teams. Like, I'm not saying that teams are like, oh, here's our board. I'll take a picture of it and you'll know who we're picking. Nobody does that. But you can generally get teams to tell you who they're interested in and who they're not. Or at least figure it out. And I think a lot of that would go away if we had trades. I mean, that's just me selfishly speaking. I do think it would create some interest in the draft. I mean, it'd be pretty cool. I mean, what if you were sitting there on draft day, Eric, and all of a sudden it was announced, the Braves have just traded the number 20 pick in the draft to the Chicago Cubs, along with Kyle Muller, and they've acquired Wilson Contreras, or whatever. Like, I think if you had trades like that going down on draft day, you would have more people watching the draft going, whoa, like, what just happened? So I do kind of feel like it's coming. Like, I think they'll have some limitations so teams don't go crazy and trade 8 first rounders or something. But I do kind of feel like it's coming.
Yeah, it was just, again, like you said, just creating that spectacle at the draft, I think, is something that the baseball has been wanting to do for a while, has needed to do for a while. And that would be, I don't want to call it an easy fix to that, but it would certainly be like one of those big headline features, like, you know, things are happening in the draft other than just a list of names. Now, there's the recognition problem of college baseball players versus college football and basketball players. That's a separate issue, and that's like a visibility problem that's separate from all of that. But, you know, again, having those traits, it just gives fans another reason to watch. It's something interesting could happen rather than just kind of getting a list of names that, frankly, most casual fans, unless they're reading sites like ours, for example, might actually not even know at all. So, okay, I know that folks have been listening to this podcast and wanting the answer to this one question, and I put it at the bottom on purpose. Talk to us a little bit right now. Who are you thinking the Braves are going to take in the first round? And do you have any like names just for Braves fans in particular to take, keep an eye on for days 2 and 3 that you know that they may be interested in?
Not so much days 2 and 3 because they just pick low enough. Like if they were picking, if they had a sandwich pick or they were picking, right, you know, in the 40s, you could kind of speculate who might be there. So I don't really per se, you know, in terms of that, you know, I keep hearing like you name a college pitcher and almost every college pitcher will probably be on the board when we get to 20. I mean, it's possible, honestly, that we might get to 20 and no college pitchers have been taken.
Wild.
I mean, maybe not. Like I can see the Angels taking a college pitcher, but like the two guys who I feel like who probably go ahead of, well, there's a couple, like, you know, Carson Wisenhunt, who got suspended the whole year at East Carolina for taking a PED, failing a test. He said it came from a supplement. He's pitching the Cape Cod League. The stuff is what it was before he got suspended. And he was, he was going to go around the Braves pick. He might go ahead because somebody, like you mentioned, Eric, some of the guys have been hurt. So Carson Wisenhunt comes back. He's pitching well. People are like, okay, like got to take Carson Wisenhunt, Connor Prelip, who, you know, might have been the number one overall pick, you know, looked like he had a chance to do that a couple years ago. And he had Tommy John surgery in May 21. He's thrown two bullpens. He threw a bullpen before the SEC tournament on May 23rd. And he threw a bullpen at the draft combine about 10 days ago. And that's it. But like at the SEC thing, it was in the rain, you know, everything was operating well. And then at the combine, I mean, it's crazy, but 3.5 minute bullpen. Second time you've seen him since he got hurt, and he looked like he had his pre-injury stuff. But like, you know, maybe Cooper Jerpy from Oregon State, who led Division I strikeouts, you know, goes ahead of them. But like, honestly, all three of those guys could be there. You know, as could, you know, Blade Tidwell from Tennessee, Justin Campbell from Oklahoma State, Gabriel Hughes from Gonzaga, Thomas Harrington from Campbell. I don't know if I'm missing it. Like, but literally, if you say the Braves could take a college pitcher, it could literally be they could have their choice of almost any college pitcher. I mean, Kumar Rocker. I mean, I had no idea what to make of him.
I'd be shocked of that.
Well, no, I would be too. But I'm just saying, hey, he's a Georgia product. I mean, you know, Georgia high school product. They'd be bringing him home. But like Kumar Rocker, you know, everybody knows he's pitching well in short stints in an indie league where the competition isn't very good, but nobody's seen any medical reports. So like, I have no idea where he's going to go. I mean, the super wild card, who's super interesting for anybody who watched any of the College World Series, is Cade Horton of Oklahoma, who, as we record this on a Monday, he just pitched yesterday and got a no decision, but he struck out 13. And Cade Horton was one of the best two-way prospects and best two sport prospects. He's also quarterback in the draft 2 years ago. And it was one of those deals. He wanted to play both sports and play both ways at Oklahoma. So he wasn't going to be signed. I mean, he could have legitimately been a top 2 round pick out of high school. So goes to Oklahoma, blows out his elbow, has Tommy John in February 21, doesn't pitch last year, comes back this year. Beginning of the year, he's a third baseman for him. They work him into the bullpen a little bit. And you know, stuff was the velocity was back, command, secondary stuff wasn't. See, and regular season ends. He has a 7.94 ERA. We have our draft top 200 up at MLB Pipeline, and he's not on it. Like everybody's like, you know, there's flashes, but he's going to come back next year and prove what he is. Well, just really interesting story. So he's looking for another weapon going in the Big 12 tournament. He was fiddling around with a cutter, and that didn't really take. but it helped him improve his slider grip. And so in counting from the Big 12 tournament to the College World Series, he struck out 49 guys in 31 innings, was pretty unhittable. The slider's up to 90 now with two plane depth. Anybody watch College World Series, ridiculous pitch. Fastball's 94 to 98 with better life to it. And he's, granted, it's only five starts. And, like, I'm not saying he's going to, like, I would take him at 12. I might take him at 20 based on what I saw at the College World Series, watching on TV and watching some of the NCAA playoffs. But, like, I think he's the biggest wild card right now because not a ton of track record because of the Tommy John. But I'll say this. If he pitched like he did the last five starts, Eric, all year, or – for 10 starts instead of five, he might be the first college pitcher taken in the draft. So I'll throw his name out as a wild card. I have no idea where he's going to go, but he looks really, really good. So if you're sold on that he's healthy again, which I don't know why you wouldn't be given how well he's pitching, you know, he's athletic. I think he should get, more feel and command as he gets, the Tommy John a little further behind him. Maybe he fits at 20. Like, it's weird saying this, but, like, just after having watched that so recently yesterday where his stuff was just ridiculous, like, maybe he should go in the first round.
I love the wild card pick. I think what we know from this discussion is that the first round is going to be kind of the Wild West, especially with how this pitching situation is going to go. The Braves are going to have to just ultimately just kind of see what happens in the board in front of them and really have a really good sense of how they feel about what their board is breaking down, because there's any number of players that could be, four college pitchers could be picked ahead of them. There's a bunch of names where it could or could not happen.
I'll bet there's not four, Eric.
You don't think four?
I just don't think there's four guys to take ahead. Like, there's some really good hitters in this draft. And I feel like, I'll say the first 12 picks, 11 of them might be hitters, and the other guy might be Brock Porter, the high school pitchers. I just don't see four college pitchers who are going to go in that 11 to 19 range, which is probably more like 13 to 19. I just don't see – if it's four, it's all, like, highly speculative picks on guys. Like, it's Connor Prelip and Carson Wisenhunt, who literally threw zero innings in college this year. Maybe Cooper Jerpy sneaks in there and – maybe Cade Horton, I don't know. But, like, four might be tough. So, I'm telling you, like, I don't think it'll be zero. But I do think you can name any college pitcher, and there's a pretty good chance he's going to be available at 20.
That's why I love about this year. It doesn't feel like fait accompli or anything like that. It's like there's going to be these three guys, just who the Braves prefer. There's any number of guys they could pick. Because, again, they could just go completely off. College pitching seems – the overwhelming thing that we're hearing about, but they could just, they go and snatch, Dylan Beavers or something like that, or,
there's some good high school pitchers too. Like, I don't know what they would do with Lesko, but, like, there's a couple really good lefties, Brandon Barriera from Florida, Robbie Snelling from Nevada, who are both going to go in that range. And they might take one of those guys. It's going to be like, I know, not that the mock drafts are ever easy, like when you get down to 20s, but I do feel like top 15 picks. I'm not trying to be cocky. Like, I'll bet, like, today I could give you 15 names and, like, I'd say over under would be like 12 or 13. Of those guys will go in the top 15 picks. And after that, I just think it's wide open. Like it's a bunch of guys. Like, there's maybe a handful of guys, are going to go like 16 to 25, but literally, like, there's like probably 30 names who are going to go 15 to 45. And a lot of those guys could very easily go 20, or they could very easily go 45. Like, it's with all the uncertainty, like we were talking about earlier, with all these injured pitchers, it's just very, very strange. I just think it's going to be like, I just think we're like, even if we speak before, like, on the day of the draft, Eric, even, I don't know that we're going to know who the Braves are picking. And I may say the exact same thing. I can cross off, 15 guys I'm pretty sure are going to go ahead of them. And then it could be just about anybody.
Well, I'm definitely going to be texting you. I'm kidding. I'm not texting you on draft day, just to confirm that. But Jim, as always, greatly appreciate your time. I feel bad that I've already held you on longer than I promised I would, but it was a lot of fun talking with you about the draft. For our listeners, I want to make sure that you take the chance to, if you are not subscribed to the Battery Power podcast feed, make sure that you do so. We are on all of the known podcast platforms that we are aware of, Google, iTunes, Spotify, whatever you want. If you subscribe to this podcast, that feed, not only do you get this podcast, which is our minor league show, you also get the unnamed show that has been launched by our fearless leader, Chris Willis, that is more of a deep dive in analytics, our flagship show hosted by the great Brad Rowland, and the Daily Hammer, which is kind of our daily recap of what's been going on the day's games before, hosted by Sean Coleman. Thank you all so much for all the support. Thanks to Jim again for taking the time to talk about the draft with me. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.